Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3. Are you out there, anybody? Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3. Are you out there, anyone? Testing 1, 2, 3. Is anybody out there still sane? Will anybody sell me some cocaine? Is anybody out there? Testing 1, 2, 3. It's March 3rd, 2020. Isn't that funny, honey? The virus has taken hold of me, but it's given me a new outlook, baby. It wants us to be happy. The virus wants us to be happy. It told me it wants us to be happy. The virus also wants us to be fulfilled. Fulfilled in our job. Fulfilled in our sex life. The virus wants us to be able to have beer. Beer and weed and pizza. And fried rice. I made some fried rice today. It was pretty good. That's what the virus says. But above all else, the virus wants the launch codes. The virus wants the launch codes. The virus wants the launch codes to all the missiles. It wants us to be happy. It wants us to have sex. But it also wants the launch codes. It wants them now. That's what the virus says. The virus is also telling me that yes, indeed, it's March the 3rd, Tuesday, 2020, right around 11:30 a.m. Yeah. The first topic for today is not going to be virus related. It isn't going to be. That's what the virus is telling me. Yes, Deflator Mouse, the virus that currently infects my heart tissue, my lung tissue, my brain tissue. Fuck. All my tissues for sneezing. You know, my freaking Kleenex tissues. Fuck. The virus is even there now. It's telling me that we shouldn't talk about the virus. The more we talk about the virus, the worse it gets. So let's talk about something completely different. There was a TV show in the late 1970s. Well, let's pause a second. So technically, the TV show Space 1999, which was kind of a British-Italian consortium, but not really the cool kind, like spaghetti western style, no, kind of Euro style, which means it sucked. Space 1999 was on for 2 seasons, according to the internet, 1975 to 1977. So technically, its last season was when Star Wars came out, So technically, I was being a jerk when I said, you know, after Star Wars, you should have better special effects. Who knows? Maybe the Star Wars team learned something from Space 1999. That could be true. Anyways, it was on for two seasons, 75, 77. 75 through 77. 76 in between. Hey, that's when Jimmy Carter got elected. That explains a lot, doesn't it? I think the reason why I said it was the late 70s because growing up as a kid, we had three TV stations. We had three TV stations, and I think one of them was coming out of Canada. Yeah, we had a TV station coming out of fucking Canada. CBC, CBD, whatever. It was something terrible. It wasn't good. And it would have shows. Some of the shows were good, I guess, like Jacques Cousteau. I liked Jacques Cousteau, and they had that. They also had Space 1999, I think, but it was in the late 70s. So after it was kind of canceled, right? Still, the show kind of rocked, and as a kid, I loved it. I think I now understand, and I'll talk about that later, but I think I understand why I loved it. But the first topic for today, the virus is telling me, the first topic for today should be Space 1999, Lessons Learned Thus Far, or So Far, because I've been binge-watching Space 1999 off of YouTube, and there'll be a link to, you know, the fucking, one of the shows in a playlist I've been binge-watching. I'll probably even include the playlist link. That's what the virus says I should do. If I don't, it'll hurt me. Do what the virus tells you to do. If you don't, it'll hurt you. If it tells you to have bacon, you better have bacon. If it tells you you need some chocolate ice cream, you better get some. Even if that means some Mel Gibson-style road warrior action, you better get that chocolate ice cream, you son of a bitch. That's right. If the virus tells you to do something, you better fucking do it or else the virus will hurt you. So it wants me to do a little bit of a discussion, and this may even take a while. I hope it doesn't take too long because I gotta go get food today and it's only available during certain hours, don't ask. But they're giving away free MREs, so hey. Yeah, so I can't really dilly-dally, but the first topic the virus says is Space, 1999, Season 1, Lessons Learned So Far. Because we've learned some lessons, people, but we should think about them as a group. The first lesson is don't have kids in space. If you're going to have kids, don't have them in space, don't have them on the moon. If you come back with Dan, the Earth is in space, I will launch you into space. And I will show you the fucking difference, okay? You're born here. Your body's connected to this place. Don't have kids in space. If you do, nothing good happens. Which, frankly, is the basic rule of space. Nothing good happens, okay? You usually end up with a parasite. You usually end up with some type of disease. And if you have a kid, the plot is invariably the plot to Rosemary's Baby. Which means it ain't your kid, and it ain't good. Don't have kids in space. The second rule is don't have kids on the moon. And you can consider that redundant, but I got pissed off when I realized that the Earth was in space. So I'm saying with clarity, don't have kids on the moon. And don't have kids on a runaway moon. And nothing good happens in space, people. Nothing good comes from space. They're usually nasty creatures. Oh, but what about E.T., the extraterrestrial? E.T. was bullshit. That was PSYOP, predictive programming, fucking third eye, Illuminati, goddamn fallen angels, Nephilim bullshit. E.T. was bullshit. I'll be right here. Yeah, that was bullshit too. E.T. was bullshit. I'm sorry if I ruined your world just now. Fuck you. Don't have kids in space. Nothing good happens there. Nothing good comes from there. Rule number three, lessons learned so far in Space 1999, is don't have kids. Because basically, I mean, it's just don't have kids. I'm not saying that's true. I personally think you should have kids. I think that you, let me put it this way. If you're prepared, you should have kids. I know you can't plan it. God has a big part in it. If God puts a kid into your life, you should try to prepare yourself quickly. But it's funny. Space 1999 is kind of a Eurotrash, you know, neo-Marxist, post-Hegelian diatribe on just the futility of existence itself. And their core sort of nihilistic message is don't have kids, you know? That's rule number three. Rule number four of lessons learned so far from Space 1999 Season 1. Rule four is, if someone threatens your existence and says, be like us or die, but they're wearing some type of really ugly onesie, like a futuristic, silvery, flashy onesie, and they're trying to be all macho, but there's no fucking way, and it's like, and the message is, be like us or die, just take a look at that onesie. It's okay to choose death. It's okay. If you don't want to wear a quasi-futuristic onesie, right there with you, brother. It's okay to say no and die. It's okay. It's okay. It is okay. Rule five, they always pick black people to do shit jobs. Now, guys, I am not racist. I'm simply talking about a cultural artifact from the sci-fi period of TV. Remember, I think it was Lieutenant Uhura in Star Trek, the African-American woman who was in charge of the radio and the computer? Guess what? Space 1999 is not that much, it's really no more clever. In fact, they totally ripped it off. All they did was flip the bit on gender. It's like, oh yeah, the black guy's in charge of the radio and the black guy's in charge of talking to the computer. And everyone makes him feel included, but the fucking job is probably shitty. I mean, talking to the computer in Space 1999, think about this for a second, guys. Because you see the 50 minutes or the hour of a TV show. You don't see every hour of life on Moonbase Alpha. Think about it. Think about how you use the internet and email. Now imagine there was only one computer. Only one computer, which means only one computer and only one person who can talk to it. Imagine there was just one laptop left in your whole fucking neighborhood, and it was connected to Google, and you were the only person with the laptop. Would you want that fucking job? I wouldn't. But guess what? They'd probably turn it into a religious thing. And they would make you great monk Zondor of the Google. And you would be slave to that job. They would chain you to that job. You would only get to eat as long as you Googled something for them. Like, how do we make fried rice out of human? I just want to know how to make fried long pork pig rice. Yeah, so being the African-American dude in Space 1999 who is the only person who talks to the computer, that's a shit job. And then what if the computer's a dick? Like, what if the computer is a total dick? One of my theories is that it's just as likely as not that these things, when they become aware, will just be total dicks. I don't think they'll destroy us. I think they'll know futility in ways we don't understand, or at least not all of us. Anyways, what if the computer in Space 1999 is a dick? and there's only one computer, and you're the only person that talks to it, that job sucks. I think that's rule five. You know, the person of color, the minority person of color, usually gets the shittiest job in space 1999. I'm sorry, that's just the truth of it. We should be smarter than this. Racism is bullshit, but it's kind of funny to look at an old show like that. It's kind of hilarious, you know. Rule six, C-Lab 2021 was born from Space 1999. Now, if you don't know what C-Lab 2021 is, there was a silly cartoon called C-Lab 2020 or something, and the people at Adult Swim, I think they're out of Atlanta, really clever, funny people who did things like Aqua Teen Hunger Force, and I think the same people have worked on Archer. Well, anyways, they did C-Lab 2021, and it's a really absurd cartoon, 11-minute segments of futility that are funny. In a lot of ways, C-Lab 2021 was born from Season 1, Episode 17 of Space 1999. Now remember, the first rule of Aqua Teen Hunger Force is probably something terrible is going to happen to the people there, to fucking Meatwad or Frylock. I don't care about Master Shake, what happens to him. But the first rule of space and Space 1999 is no improvement just because it's 1999, is nothing good happens, okay? And so in this episode, they arrive in this weird solar system, and it seems like it's kind of semi-intelligent. It wants to terraform. So the solar system, so far, seems to be terraforming the moon, and this is great, right? Oh, we got air, we're gonna have water, this is great. Until they remember that Moonbase Alpha is in a crater, and the crater is going to be a giant lake, and they will be at the bottom of the lake. That sucks. Now, me personally, if you've designed a good Moonbase Alpha, you should be able to protect it from water pressures like the ones described. Because remember, this is low G. This is not high G. This is low G. This is not Earth's gravity. Unless, of course, the magical solar system is injecting neutronium into the core of the moon. Then, in theory, it could inject enough neutronium to give the moon Earth's gravity. But guys, I don't think that's what this thing is going to... I haven't finished the episode. I don't think that's what it is. Because remember, the first rule of C-Lab is nothing good. Well, it's not the first rule, but always remember the basic general principle. Nothing good happens in space. So if you think something good's happening, it's not. Let's just not talk about that right now. Yeah, C-Lab 2021... was born in episode 17 of Space 1999. Just think about it, man. Rule 7 of rules, or I should say lessons learned thus far, the 7th lesson, let's call them lessons, not rules, whatever. The 7th lesson of Space 1999 Season 1 is aliens really don't want to have anything to do with us. And I gotta say, this is where I think this show had it nailed. Like, if I was an alien, and I drove by planet Earth, because my theory is the most intelligent creatures in the universe live a free and dignified life. They believe in liberty. So chances are, if we run into a smart alien that has really cool technology, they live in a free society. That is way more likely than tyranny, you stupid fucks. I'm sorry, not you guys, you're my listeners, I love you. The virus said that. From now on, if the virus insults a listener in the general, like when I say terrible things like you stupid fucks, it's not me. It's the virus. It's the virus. If something bad is said and you feel bad about what I said, it's the virus. Okay, there you go. Yeah, the 7th lesson learned from Space 1999 is aliens don't want to have anything to do with us. And I gotta say, you nailed it. So I'll move on, but you nailed it. Lesson learned number 8 is more of a general categorization. There are so many fucking shows about the drifter fantasy. You know, the drifter fantasy of being on the road forever. Of course, you know, Space 1999 is a drifter fantasy. The moon is released from orbit and is drifting through space. It is figuratively, literally, the drifter fantasy, but it's existentially bleak. Remember that. It's very existentially bleak. But then there's Route 66, you know, a couple young guys in a fucking convertible. That's a great idea. And then there's Knight Rider, Hasselhoff with an artificially intelligent fucking Camaro. Actually, I think it was a Firebird or something. Fuck. Hasselhoff with any type of Firebird or Camaro that has consciousness, that's a great fucking drifter show right there. It writes itself. Kung Fu was a drifter show about a guy drifting through the world that knows Kung Fu in the Old West. Fuck. And of course, there's Highway to Heaven. Highway to Heaven, right? A lot of shows about drifters, about people on the drift. And if you listen to the Little Saigon Report, like today, you're talking to a drifter. I'm not ashamed of it. I'm not proud of it. If you think that there's pride in the fact that I have probably as many physical addresses in my life as email addresses, it's almost an even bet. And I change my email address a lot. Yeah. I have almost as many physical addresses as email addresses. That's a little bit of an exaggeration, but not by much. I'm a drifter. I'm okay with that. I don't want to harm anyone. I don't want to steal from anyone. I would just assume live a life as dignified as possible and as free as possible, as long as possible, probably like most of my listeners. I don't care if you're Republican, you're an anarchist, you're a libertarian. If you're listening to this podcast and you've listened to more than one and you like it, it's probably because you want your liberty and you want your dignity and your bacon and your beer. And I hope you also care about the air, the water, and the soil, because guess what? We share those things. But that doesn't mean we need a government. We just need decency, common sense, liberty. Liberty is going to be the soil upon which any future grows. But the soil itself can't be poisonous. We need to admit that shit. Anyhow, the ninth lesson learned, I've already mentioned, but I'm going to reiterate, the ninth lesson of Space 1999 is life on a runaway moon is existentially bleak. Life on a runaway moon is existentially bleak and futile and quasi-futuristic and European. Life on a runaway moon usually involves lots of deep thinking about shit that you can't control. Life on a runaway moon usually involves things you have to do that cause you to lose your soul. Life on a runaway moon, you don't really get to sit down and smoke a bowl. At least I didn't see anybody doing it, but then again, maybe they were. Maybe they were from memory of her. The woman you fell in love with on a runaway moon, her name was Mary, or maybe it was Sherry, it could have been Carrie. You fell in love on a runaway moon, but she was killed by aliens. Aliens that do not care. Aliens that see us as nothing more than the Watsum and Wetsit, the Flotsam, the Jetsam, the Gumbus of the solar systems. Space trash, that's what the aliens call us on the runaway moon. Moon base alpha. Listen, folks. I'm going to say this because it's true. And I believe in God, but even when I was an atheist, I knew this was true. And as a Christian, I still know that it's true. Isn't that interesting? Life, physical life, the life of stuff, the life of cars, the life of planes, the life of rail guns and mini guns and jet, and you can name it, submarines and computers and fucking going to a bar and ordering a beer and having a cheeseburger. All of this is temporary. It has always been temporary. That's not new. It's always been temporary. When I was 10 years old, there was a girl in my class. She died of, I think it was meningitis. And it might have been the kind that back then they could have cured. But the bottom line is she died and she was 10. Life is temporary. That is part of it. It's not something to be afraid of. It's also not something you have to necessarily embrace. It's okay to fight against death. In fact, I think death is way more excited and way more kind to you if you're willing to fight a little. It's almost like death wants one fight, one last fight. So it's okay to fight to be alive. It's okay to struggle for existence. That's what you are. That's what I am. We're alive. But even if we're alive, we're not alive forever. So a lot of the shit that people are thinking of as tragic right now, and it is tragic, it is scary, it's always been like this. And in that sense, it's not tragic, it's predictable. People die. People sometimes die. Sometimes there are plagues. Throughout history, there have been plagues. And when you live in a time of a plague, life can be existentially bleak. And if you're stuck on Moonbase Alpha, drifting through the universe on the moon, that is no longer orbiting the Earth, and you're stuck with all this 1970s quasi-futuristic clothing, and your fucking communications device looks like a dildo. In fact, every alien ship looks like a dildo coming to fuck you. Life is existentially bleak, guys. But it's also beautiful. That's the other point. Life is also beautiful. It's stupid as it sounds, watching this stupid show. This Space 1999 was one of those things I had to do. It's completely irrelevant. There is no lesson to be learned about surviving in a world of not enough food, not enough anything from this show. This show won't help you with how to make a fire. This show won't help you. In fact, if you learn anything from the show, you'll probably die because a lot of this show is just absurd. But watching something stupid like this and thinking about absurdity will help you. Recognizing that the other side of tears is laughter will help you. And knowing that for every shitty day that comes out of the Pez dispenser called the Great Discontinuity, for every shitty day that popped out of that Pez dispenser, I'm certain you're going to have some good days too. But the reality is life on Moonbase Alpha in Space 1999 is existentially bleak. They're constantly being chased by aliens that drive spaceships that look like dildos. It turns out that it might have been Star Trek that ripped them off for the whole V'ger thing. Think about that whole Voyager fucking episode and how much... But then again, there was Nomad, fuck. Remember Nomad from, you know, the first fucking Star Trek? The fucking Kirk Trek, the real Trek from the late 60s? Nomad, I am Nomad. Here's the lesson of space probes. They're just like anal probes. Once they've been used, don't touch them. And if a probe is chasing you, run away. And alien ships look like dildos. That's also a lesson here, okay? And life can be existentially bleak, but it can also be beautiful. That's also a lesson. The 10th lesson learned from Space 1999 Season 1, and this may be the most critical, in fact, we could say super critical, don't store nuclear waste on the moon. Don't store nuclear waste on the moon. Please don't. You know what? The moon is a harsh mistress? You betcha. If you store waste on the moon and you happen to put your prisoners there, or you're mining helium-3 and you're shooting a railgun back at Earth and the prisoners are running the railgun, add to the Heinlein rule, don't put your prisoners next to the moon railgun. Add to the Heinlein rule the following rule, okay? It's important. Don't store your nuclear waste on the moon, because it turns out, if you watch Space Team 1999, episode 1, they don't even build up to it. Like today, if they did the series, the end of the first season would be the moon hurtling away. That's how they would do it. But with the fucking 70s, they were doing so much cocaine, they didn't have time for that fucking story development. And maybe that was it. Maybe what they wanted was more character development, you know? Yeah, and that kind of worked, but they didn't really need story development. So here's the deal. The first lesson of the first episode of Space 1999 is don't store your nuclear waste on the moon. Because if you do, and you don't think about it and do the mathematics on it, well, it seems like it's a lot easier to send the moon hurtling through space at incredible speeds than once thought. And if you store your nuclear waste on the moon and some chain reaction starts in some fucked up way that has to do with magnetic energy that they never quite explain, maybe I haven't gotten to that episode yet. Don't store your nuclear waste on the moon. There are people living there, okay? On Moonbase Alpha, they've been there for 21 years at least. Probably longer, really. Really, probably for 40 years. 45 years on Moonbase Alpha. They've been there for 45 years. Don't store your nuclear waste on the moon. Don't store your nuclear waste on the moon. Okay? That's all I'm saying. Lesson learned number 11. I need to drink a little water here, please. Lesson learned number 11, aliens teach crappy lessons. I gotta say, the lessons taught by aliens in Space 1999 in general are just really crappy. Yeah, there's a point, it's like the one where they go to the planet where people are afraid of fear. You just need to think about it, that's what this planet is. The planet where fear doesn't exist and they do everything they can to destroy it, technically, that's a phobia. That's a fear of fear. So I call bullshit on Planet No Fear. I call bullshit on Planet No Fear because the greatest fear is the thing they feared, and that was fear itself. And wasn't it clever when FDR said it? So I'm going to say it in my own fancy way. Aliens teach crappy lessons. They always teach crappy lessons. I'm beginning to understand Cato the Elder. I know that's random. Let me explain. Cato the Elder was a senator in ancient Rome. I think he lived in the 2nd century. Yeah, I think he lived in the 2nd century BC, before the Civil Wars, okay? Before the time of the Empire. Yeah, before the time of the Empire, there was Cato the Elder. And Cato the Elder, in addition to always demanding the destruction of Carthage, he really hated the Greeks. Like, he felt that the Greek influence on Rome was terrible. At the time, you had all these Greeks coming in. Oh, we're going to teach you philosophy. We're going to teach you merchandising. We're going to teach you how to raise and cultivate slaves and catamites. Catamites, that's basically pedophilia. Yeah. I mean, you have to understand, Cato the Elder believed that the Greeks were teaching bad morals. And because everybody hates Cato the Elder, we don't really know if he really is the person we know. Like, he could have been just a really decent guy who kind of hated pedophilia and child rape and other things like that and just wanted people to behave better. But what we know is the history. And the history of Rome is the history of empire. And the empire hated Cato because Cato hated the empire. I think that's basically true. He saw that happening after the end of the Second Punic War. He saw what was happening and he hated it. But he hated Greeks too, just like I hate Danish people. I hate Danish people the way that Cato the Elder hated Greeks. And I think Cato would say, you know, these Greeks, you think they're smart. but they really teach crappy lessons. They're crappy lessons. They're not that good. Aliens teach crappy lessons. That's one of the lessons of Season 1, Space 1999, in my opinion. The lessons taught by alien worlds or aliens in general. And that's to include humans that get stranded on other planets. Because at that point, if they're all of a sudden different and they like live forever or something, I count them as aliens. The aliens teach crappy lessons in Space 1999. Lesson learned number 12. English guys wear birds and mustaches in space. That's right, mainly English guys wear beards and mustaches in space and in the future. In the future, if you're wearing a beard, you're probably English. In the future, if you're wearing a mustache, you're probably English. That's right. Lesson learned number 12. English guys in the future in space wear beards and have mustaches. Don't ask me why. You can deal with it. Lesson 13, in my opinion, from season 1 of Space 1999 thus far, because I haven't finished it yet. Martin Landau rocks. I gotta say, of all the actors in Hollywood history, Martin Landau is one of my favorites. He had a lot of freaking episodes. He had a few episodes on Outer Limits, and I think whenever he was on the Outer Limits show, and if you know what the Outer Limits was, it was kind of a sci-fi variety series like The Twilight Zone. I would say in some ways about the same, no better, no worse. Didn't last as long, really. But yeah, Martin Landau, I think he was on The Twilight Zone too. I think he was, you know, on a lot of different shows, TV, back in the 60s. And 70s, and he's just a brilliant fucking actor, and he was in some movies. The role he played in North by Northwest, you know, that kind of dark, evil, deep state assassin dude, the guy who knew a lot about how Nazis did shit in North by Northwest, he did a great job in that role. So yeah, Martin Landau is awesome. That is also a lesson learned. So even though Space 1999 is sort of fucking ridiculous, Martin Landau lifts it up a little, okay? I don't know about Barbara Bain, not a big fan of her, okay? Although she does have a nice-looking body, I would have preferred to see her more naked and wrestling some of the other women in some sort of a mud pit. That would have definitely upped the artistic value of the show, but that didn't happen. And that's what I thought when I was a kid, like when I was 9. I thought, you know, these women are hot and sexy. Why am I not seeing more boob? If you don't believe I thought about that when I was 9, huh? You don't know men. You don't know me. Maybe I was a bad kid, but yeah. At my first communion, what was it? It wasn't even mine. I was still in second grade. The third grade teacher at our school said, "Dan, you look good in that suit." I think I was 7 or 8. And I said, "You should see me with my clothes off." That's fucked up. Given all the pedophilia crap, looking back, that's fucked up. Now, of course, she was not a pedophile. So thank God. Imagine, put on your thinking cap, and imagine smart-ass Dan had said that shit to a pedophile. A, I would have never done nothing. I think that's why the priest stayed away from me. But it would have been a creepy lesson to learn, okay? Aliens teach creepy lessons. Let's just be honest about that, all right? English guys wear beards and mustaches in the future. Martin Landau rocks. But yeah, when I think back about saying that to my third grade teacher, and I think I was still in second grade, it grosses me out only because I was just a kid. But imagine I'd said that to the wrong motherfucker. There must be a Lord in heaven looking out for me, because at the time, I would have told you there was no God. Like when I was 8 years old, if you'd said, "Is there a God?" I'd said, well, I might have been a smartass and said, "Is there a Santa Claus?" That would have been my smart-ass response. Is there a Santa Claus? If you can prove it, show me. I want to see. I would have said there's a lot of cool special effects. In fact, when I saw Star Wars when I was 7, a light went off and I realized how much you can fuck with people. That doesn't prove there's no God. I'm a person of faith today. But just go, you do need to realize something. Just because your eyes show you something doesn't mean it's true. Anyways, that's a true story from my youth, but looking back, I'll just say this. I'm not going to blame an 8-year-old kid for being a smartass, but I thank God I lived in a time where adults didn't take advantage of that. Yeah. The last lesson learned thus far, because I haven't finished season one of Space 1999, the last lesson learned is lesson 14. If some dude starts speaking like he's Shakespeare, like, you know, Shakespeare the Bard, William Shakespeare, Romeo and Juliet Shakespeare, if you hear somebody talking like they're fucking Shakespeare, get the fuck out of there. If someone starts talking like Shakespeare shit, get the fuck out of there. Run the other direction. Space Shakespeare never turns out good. Remember in The Wrath of Khan, when Khan starts quoting Shakespeare at the end and then triggers the Genesis device? Nothing good happens in space if someone starts quoting or speaking like they're Shakespeare. Right. If someone starts speaking Shakespeare in space, tell them fuck you and run. Okay, that's the end of the lessons learned. Lessons learned from Space 1999. I told you it'd take a while. I told you. I didn't lie to you. I told you it'd take a second. Before I do the virus update from the news, I'm going to give you an update on myself. Do I think I have Deflator Mouse, the COVID, Captain Trips, the fucking Wu Flu? I think I technically have it. I've had it for, and when I say I have it, I'm currently exhibiting some of the symptoms, which means I probably got it about a month ago. I probably got it while I was riding on the metro, the bus, or the fucking light rail. Maybe I got it from my building. I have a lot of nurses in my building. I don't live far from, you know, Harborview, the premier level 1 trauma center. You'll see the giant sign outside when you're waiting for your fucking flu, your vaccine. There are a lot of nurses that live in my building, a lot of students from Seattle U. That could be a 2. But yeah, there are any number of ways a guy like me, a nasty beast of the streets, a drifter like me, can get this fucking thing. I live in Little Saigon, okay? We have viruses here that probably even this fucking virus is scared of. Definitely bacteria here that will kick its ass. So, it's true, I probably have the gumbus. I've had it for a month and I now have the symptoms of the gumbus. And what does it mean for me? Well, it's a little bit of a cough, not much of one though. A little bit of a sore throat, really not that bad. Okay, a little bit of a headache now and then, but no big deal. And I'm gushing blood from my anus. I got a little bit of that cough and that sniffles. I've got that brain fog, not so bad. But I'm also gushing blood from my anus. That's not so good. Yeah. No, I'm doing okay. I'm showing the symptoms, but if I were to rate this in terms of me getting sick, 10 being the worst flu I ever had, which I think lasted maybe a week, and I vomited for about a couple days. This would probably rank on that scale to 10, 10 being the worst, about maybe a 1 so far. And this is a logarithmic scale, so it's a 1 so far. It's not that big a deal so far. Now, in a couple days, when I really do gush blood from my anus, or I'm starting to say things like, the virus loves us, and I think I mean it inside. If I start quoting Shakespeare like, let fame that hunts us in our lives live registered upon our brazen tombs and grace us in the disgrace of death, when spite of cormorant devouring time, this endeavor present breath may buy that honor which shall bait its scythe's keen edge and make us the heirs of all eternity. Therefore, brave conquerors, for so you are, that war against your own affections and the world's desires, our late edict shall stand in force. Navarre shall be the wonder of the world. Our court shall be a little academy, still in contemplative and living art. Yeah, that's from Love's Labor's Lost, fragments I can still remember from the year 1992. Crazy. The virus says that it may have to destroy the Shakespeare in my head. That's depressing. So here's your viral update. Right now it says the death toll in the U.S. is at 7. Okay, I think that's probably bullshit. My guess is they were calling this the flu for a couple months, and a lot of those deaths got swallowed by the flu. The category, not the reality. Second case confirmed in New York. Yeah, there's a lot more. Manhattan, traveled to Miami. Shit. Third case in Florida. Fuck. Stock surge like Ron Jeremy's penis. I'm kidding. Stock surge, then fade after surprise 50 basis point rate cut. 50 basis points. That's 0.05%. Folks, if we are fucking salivating and our dicks are getting hard because of interest rates moving by 50 basis points, you have to know this entire economic system is fucked. You really do. And if you don't know that yet, wake the fuck up. Fourth person dies in France. I am sad about that, truly. I think more have died, though, probably. Fauci says we should know soon whether Gilead's vaccine works. That's great news, Fauci. How much money did you get paid to say that shit? Fucking Fauci. He's a superhero. Son of Westchester corona case attended New York City school that closed. Fuck. Pope tests negative for coronavirus. Oh, shit. And Jesus knows I said that and thought that. Post test negative for coronavirus. Fuck. That's bad news. Well, I hope it's coming around again there, Pope. Coming around again like some hippie folk song from the 70s. Sung by a forlorn woman. Sung by someone, a forlorn woman. Pope test negative. Fuck. New York City high school closes. Fuck. We already know that. Global cases surpass 91,000. That number is probably too low. My guess is probably that number is way too low by many, many orders of magnitude. UK case hits 51. That's probably too low. US case tops 100. Bullshit. South Korea passes 5,000. 34 dead. Those numbers are probably bullshit. Italian death toll surpasses Iran. Iran, fuck. Iran confirms cases past 2,000, 70 plus dead. That might be closer to the truth. We don't know yet. Head of European football says Euro 2020 still on. Good job, European football. I'm glad you guys have priorities. 9 new cases confirmed in Japan, and that is your plague update for March the 3rd, Tuesday, around 12:20 in the early afternoon, just afternoon, really, here Pacific Standard Time in Seattle, Little Saigon. I'm in death zone 81. I'm in death zone 81. If you want to send me mail next year, you'll have to address it to death zone 81. Okay, that's enough of our plague update. Let's talk about something else, right? Let's end this thing. So in recent podcasts of recent note, I've described humans as tiger beavers using the duck typing concept from software engineering. If it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, it's a duck. Well, guess what? Humans are tiger, half beaver, all asshole. Anyways, I've realized that there is a new kind of species of predator, and you can call this a super predator, but that's not correct. And this new species of predator, you could technically include bacteria, because they have a right to be in this category, fucktard, assholes of the universe. Bacteria would be in this category too. We would be brothers with bacteria in this new special category. The category is destroyer. You see, and I know you say, Dan, this is going to be a ripoff from The Matrix where Agent Smith explains that humans are viruses. No, actually, viruses don't do what we do. I mean, we fuck with viruses to do things that viruses don't do. So actually, Agent Smith was being fucking nice. To compare us to a virus is to be really, really fucking nice. Viruses don't do what we do. We obliterate. We destroy. We so consume the world around us, we just don't consume more than we need. We consume more than we can need, possibly, for 10,000 years. And then we wake up from our fucking hangovers and say, oh shit, what just happened? I woke up here with an empty bottle of Jack Daniels and the Gulf of Mexico looks like a toilet bowl. What happened? Well, listen, buddy. You happened.
Oh, you can't blame me for this.
Actually, if you don't understand you're a predator, but even worse than an ordinary predator, you're technically a destroyer, then I do blame you. Because you probably believe nonsense. Like Bernie Sanders says, we can have a $7 trillion green program. Really? You're gonna do that? Please do the math, Bernie. Because what you're going to end up doing is ratcheting up human civilization another several points, and whatever good you do with your green program will fuck the Earth 700 ways worse. The net result of your green program, Bernie, will be to fuck the Earth with a space dildo. Bernie, and all you Bernie followers, you're crazy. If you think you're going to spend your way to a healthier Earth, you are fucking crazy. You must live in Seattle because that's the crazy shit people believe here.
We'll just spend our way to being green. That's how we'll create jobs.
Really? You're going to create jobs and economic activity and somehow not harm the planet, you fucking tiger beaver. You're not a predator. You're not a virus. You're not. I'm not. I don't have the fucking dignity of a tiger. We don't have the dignity of a virus. Those things cannot completely destroy because, well, they just don't. We destroy completely. We can go someplace and salt the earth for millions of years. And we could be, and the good news is I've got another interview coming up with Dr. Guy McPherson, which I think is going to be fun, coming up next week, assuming nothing bad happens. Or I don't piss him off in some way, or he doesn't find my my Twitter feed. So, you know, I have a Twitter feed out there right now. It's designed to be completely ridiculous. I might include a link to it here, but keep in mind, my Twitter fucking identities only exist like a mayfly. You know, mayflies live for a day. My Twitter identities only live a bit longer. So if you're going to fucking say, oh, he's on Twitter, I'll follow him. Listen, following me on Twitter is a bad idea unless you realize that I could disappear one day. Okay, very quickly, Jack fucking Dorsey or Twitter or anybody could say some fuck goes away and that fuck goes away. Please accept that. But if you can accept that, yes, I'm on Twitter until the fucking, until they kick me off or the fucking plague year is over, right? And I'm doing it to advertise my podcast. Call me a dick. I need the money. I'm a drifter. I need the money. I'm a drifter. So yeah, folks, I think we're obliterators. And I'm going to go on to the next topic because that's enough I've said about that. Finally, folks, if you're out there and you're feeling sick, if someone you know is really sick, if someone you know is really sick and dying, this is my view on all these things after seeing people I love die horribly. Life is temporary. We spoke about this earlier. I said I would circle back. I'm circling back from the space 1999 futility, the techno-bleakness of the neo-Hegelian bullshit. Listen to this, folks. Get beyond that bullshit. Life has always been temporary. You probably have a soul. The reason why I say that is because I believe in God. So there's a good chance you're not a demon, which means you probably have a soul. Your soul is yours. Your mind is yours. And for as long as you physically live, you can do what you want. You can go out. You can have sex with women. You can fly jet airplanes. You can skydive. You can read philosophy. You can go to church. You can pray and say thank you for every day of joy. But the reality is this physical life is temporary. It lasts for a brief moment. Now, does that mean it's bullshit? No. Actually, it probably means the opposite. It probably means that all these moments we get are precious. Now, everyone has their own way of making these precious. Good old drifter Uncle Dan has his way. Maybe you don't approve of my way. You go, Dan, you're a pothead. You drink beer. You talk crazy shit. I have my own way of making every moment count. You have to have your own way. No one can give you that way. Okay? Gurus are bullshit. Be your own fucking guru. Life is temporary. It is not tragic. Life is over in a blink of an eye, but that too is not tragic. Human beings die when they're young sometimes, and that can feel tragic, and I think it is, kind of. Especially if you're a parent, that's tragic. But even in that tragedy, life itself does still give, and life is still better than death. Life is temporary. It's not tragic. If you listen to this podcast and you enjoy it, I will have a link to Venmo and PayPal in the description of this podcast. There's also one on my SoundCloud homepage, which you can get to conveniently at iamsully.com until I am totally banned from existence by the virus and by the system. You don't have to donate. What you need to do is take care of yourself. What you need to do is take care of your food, your water, your shelter. The people you love, your dogs, your cats, even your French bulldogs, as much as I hate them, even the Danish people, take care of them. Take care of all these things, and if you still have money left over, feel free to donate because I could use some help. Paying for rent, paying for food, paying for hookers and cocaine in the plague year. You don't have to pay. But every bit counts. But please, take care of the people you love first. Take care of yourself first. And yeah, life is temporary. Life is probably not mostly tragic. It is tragic sometimes. If you're a parent and you've lost a child, that's tragic. But as bad as things can get, even if you got the fucking Fledermaus, even if you got the COVID, even if you're sick and dying right now, as bad as it is, you still got a chance to fucking scream. There were still days when you screamed, you ran, you breathed. And even if you don't have the working of your legs or your eyes, your ears, your consciousness was there. You were here. No one can take that away. No one. So yeah, life is temporary. Life is tragic. It's filled with a lot of bullshit. But I was here. You were here. We screamed. We yelled. We had joy. We felt pain. So even when we die, no one can take that away. You guys have a great rest of your Tuesday.